So our first speaker this morning is Professor Dr. Gregor Stemrich, who is a member of the Art History Department of the Freie Universität Berlin, where he is chairman of the Doctoral Committee of the Department of History and Cultural Studies. A specialist in art of the 20th and 21st centuries, Dr. Stemrich also researches media theory, expositions, and the intersections of art and film and art and science. He has published extensively, including work on Robert Morris, Dan Graham, and Lawrence Weiner. His talk today, Robert Rauschenberg's Erased de Kooning Drawing, 1953, examines this well-known but under-analyzed piece. So please join me in welcoming our first speaker.
First of all, I want to thank the selection committee of the Terra Foundation for the acceptance of my proposal and its inclusion into this conference. The work that I'm going to talk about, Robert Rauschenberg's Erased de Kooning Drawing from 1953, is well known, but perhaps not so well understood. It is understood mostly as a symbolic patricide. Young Rauschenberg killing the abstract expressionist father de Kooning. But things are not that easy if one looks at the circumstances of the production of the work. In autumn 1953, Rauschenberg visited Willem de Kooning in his studio and explained he wanted to create a drawing based on the method of erasing. De Kooning indicated he understood, declaring, "I know what you are doing." He was alluding to Rauschenberg's white paintings, which Rauschenberg recently had shown in an exhibition in New York and which caused a scandal. But Rauschenberg explained that erasing a drawing of his own would not have the desired result, since erasing was only half the process, and the result would be a return to nothing. What he had in mind was an all-erasure drawing. Therefore, the work had to begin as art. The erased drawing had to be by an artist whose abilities as a draftsman were beyond question. Hence, he was asking if de Kooning would be prepared to give him one of his own drawings. De Kooning was not enthusiastic about the idea. In their conversation, he asked whether erasing the drawing would not mean destroying it. But Rauschenberg assured him, quote, that it wouldn't be destruction, end quote. What he had in mind, would it wreak havoc only if it wouldn't work? But de Kooning still declared, quote, "I don't want to enter your work," end quote. This indicated, however, that he was beginning to understand what Rauschenberg was trying to do and what his own role in it was supposed to be. The next step was apparently for de Kooning to become aware of the possibility he could shape this role himself. He took the large unfinished canvas on which he was working at the time and placed it from inside in front of the already closed door of his studio, which, as Rauschenberg recalled, almost had the character of a religious act. Then de Kooning leafed through various portfolios of drawings, took a drawing out of one of them and declared, quote, "No, I'm not going to make it easy for you. It has to be something I would miss," end quote. One portfolio had drawings that de Kooning stated he did not like. Another had ones he would miss too much. There were also drawings that he would miss, but that would also have been easy, too easy to erase. De Kooning wanted to make it difficult for Rauschenberg, both technically and psychologically. He had a third portfolio, explained Rauschenberg, looking back in an interview. "That was mixed media, crayon and that sort of thing. I got one of those. He said he wasn't going to make it easy for me, and he didn't. I spent 4 weeks erasing that drawing. I used about 15 different types of erasers. And besides that, there's another drawing on the other side," end quote. What remained in the end were a few isolated spots of ink and extremely weak traces of the drawing that just barely make it clear that it was once a de Kooning drawing. 2 years later, Rauschenberg placed the erased de Kooning drawing in a gold frame and added a label that his friend Jasper Jones had designed, reading "Erased de Kooning drawing, Robert Rauschenberg, 1953. Let me confront this inside perspective of Rauschenberg's account of his encounter with de Kooning with an art historical outside perspective on the development of American art. In his essay published in 1980, "The New Adventures of the Avant-Garde in America," Serge Guilbault declared, quote, "The work of many avant-gardist artists, in particular Pollock, de Kooning, Rothko, and Still, seemed to become a kind of unwriting, an art of effacement, of erasure, a discourse which in its articulation tried to negate itself." As a stand-in for all this movement, I took an example of a painting of Barnett Newman. And at the end of his essay, he summarized, quote, "The trap that the modern American artist wanted to avoid, as we have seen, was the image, the statement. Distrusting the traditional idiom, he wanted to warp the trace of what he wanted to express, consciously attempt to erase, to void the readable, to censure himself." End quote. No, not end quote. Going on. In doing this, he rejected two things: the aesthetic of the popular front and the traditional American aesthetic, which reflected the political isolationism of an earlier era. The access to modernism that Greenberg had theoretically achieved elevated the art of the avant-garde to a position of international importance, but in doing so, integrated it into the imperialist machine of the Museum of Modern Art, end quote. I do not want to confront Guilbault's version of a social history of art with Greenbergian formalism, but point to something Rauschenberg had said in an interview 4 years before Guilbault published his essay. Rauschenberg was asked how de Kooning reacted when he, Rauschenberg, had asked him for a drawing of his which he could erase. Rauschenberg answered, "Terrified, another generation of erasures," end quote. That was a joke, of course, but this joke made it clear that the development of abstract expressionism could be seen as relying on procedures of erasure. Rauschenberg did not mention erased de Kooning drawing, and I think he would not be able to deal with it because he was only interested in art's relation to political power structures. Rauschenberg's erased de Kooning drawing was mostly understood as an isolated iconoclastic gesture, but I think it has to be understood against the backdrop of the development of abstract expressionist art. So I begin with Alfred Barr's chart or diagram of the development of modern art that he presented on the cover of the Museum of Modern Art catalog, Cubism and Abstract Art, in 1936. The diagram makes it obvious that up to the late 1920s, highly complex interrelations between various art movements are listed. But after that, only a very vague idea is conveyed about how things might proceed. A void, an emptiness, can be detected not in aesthetic but in historical terms. In 1944, Greenberg declared, quote, "The extreme eclecticism now prevailing in art is unhealthy, and it should be counteracted, even at the risk of dogmatism and intolerance." And 3 years later, he explained, quote, "Decidedly, painting is now in a situation that forces it to live on accumulated reserves. Not a single important impulse has manifested itself since Cubism and abstract post-Cubist art," end quote. One can say Greenberg's concept of modernism is to deal in a formalist, dogmatic way with accumulated reserves. This, however, in a teleological perspective, since the ultimate goal is to reveal the essence of painting. Greenberg developed a language of formalist criticism that didn't rely on references to personal artistic ambitions, intentions, dispositions, and so on, but on the individual painting's relation to that goal in an essentialist as well as historicist account. The artists themselves, however, used a language of negation. Pollock explained, quote, "You have got to deny ignore, destroy a hell of a lot to get at truth, end quote. And de Kooning explained, every so often a painter has to destroy painting. Cézanne did it. Picasso did it with Cubism. Then Pollock did it. He busted our idea of a picture all to hell, end quote. And Newman said, we couldn't build on anything, we had to start from scratch, end quote. This is a language of iconoclasm. Robert Motherwell started in 1945 to work on his anthology, The Dada Painters and Poets, which was published in 1951. In his introduction, he declared, quote, there's a real Dada strain in the development of abstract expressionist painting, end quote. And in fact, abstract expressionist painters were attacked by the press as anti-artists and Dadaists. All the abstract expressionists artists, however, made it very clear that they didn't want to be regarded as Dadaists. Whereas Dada was directing itself towards a political authenticity after World War I, the abstract expressionists were directing themselves towards an emotional authenticity after World War II. Interestingly enough, Motherwell titled his anthology The Dada Painters and Poets, but in the over 400 pages, you won't find almost no painting. There are only three, and even these are collages. Motherwell's title testifies to a preoccupation with painting, and this preoccupation is one of the reasons why abstract expressionism fits seemingly so well into the Greenbergian scheme. This preoccupation, however, was attacked early on by John Cage. In 1949, he gave his famous or infamous lecture on nothing at the art school Subjects of the Artists that was founded by Rothko, Still, and Newman. Cage declared, I have nothing to say, and I'm saying it, and this is poetry as I need it. We need not fear these silences, end quote. As he later explained, this was opposed to de Kooning, who had said to him before, quote, we are different. You don't want to be an artist, whereas I want to be a great artist, end quote. That was unacceptable to Cage. 1 year later, Cage gave another lecture on sand painting, where he advocated an impermanent art that was opposed to Pollock, who had justified his method to paint on the floor with reference to Indian sand painting. But in contradistinction to Indian sand painting, Pollock insisted on the permanence of his paintings. Rauschenberg's Erase de Kooning drawing can be understood as bringing together permanence and impermanence, abstract expressionist aesthetics, and Cage's aesthetics. We tend to see the work as an isolated iconoclastic gesture. Such an understanding, however, cannot explain why de Kooning was willing to collaborate. Therefore, I will ask two questions. One, is there a development in Rauschenberg's art that can make his idea of erasing the work of another artist understandable? Second, how could he get the idea that de Kooning might be willing to give him a drawing of his for the purpose of erasure? And how does this willingness relate to de Kooning's understanding of art? At question one, yes, there is a development, and it starts in 1949 with a work, a woodcut, titled, This is the First Half of a Print Designed to Exist in Passing Time. The work begins with a square wood board to serve as a printing block, into which he cut, in the direction of the grain, 13 horizontal lines, one after the other. One print of each state was made, and then one additional line was cut into the block, and the next print made until about half the original surface of the block had been cut away. The 14 prints were bound together with a cover sheet with a title like a calendar, so that they can only be looked at one after the other. The work is based on a procedure that cannot be continued as long as one likes, since theoretically, in the end, the entire original surface has been cut away. That state of the board would correspond to a blank, white sheet of paper on which nothing had been printed. A blank, white sheet of paper can only be considered part of a print if it represents the end of a sequence. That is why the title refers to the entire sequence as one print that is designed to have a temporal existence. Only the first half of this sequence was carried out in order to leave space and time for the imagination of the viewer. The white paintings that Rauschenberg produced in 1951 relate to this. They consist of an additive compilation of canvases of equal size, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7 canvases, painted white and assembled to form one painting. The surfaces were supposed to remain intensely white, so that Rauschenberg produced them with the instruction that the canvases should be repainted if the color darkened. Thus, the surfaces seemed to be hypersensitive to their current surrounding. Any change of the lighting is registered and embodied by them. The viewer who moves alongside them becomes aware of his or her own shadow, and at the same time of the presence of other people in the room. The internal referential structure of traditional paintings is thus replaced by an open referential structure that refers to the immediate external surroundings. Because the paintings are related to the changing lighting of the room, Rauschenberg's friend John Cage called them a clock of the room. Rauschenberg explained this relationship to time to his dealer, Betty Parsons, in 1951, by saying that they were large white canvases, quote, organized and selected with the experience of time, end quote. His letter stresses the spiritual implications of his paintings and their existence outside the established domain of art. At the end, he declares, quote, it's completely irrelevant that I am making them. Today is their creator, end quote. The important thing to note here is that in dealing with various media, such as the woodcut and painting, Rauschenberg returned to the same need to produce a tabula rasa in order to refer this production to a temporal horizon. With the woodcut, the temporal horizon is related to the future, as it is indicated in the procedure of taking away the original surface of a printing block. With the white paintings, by contrast, the temporal horizon is hypersensitively related to the present, and with Erase the Kooning drawing, it is related to the past. In regard especially of the white paintings and of Erase the Kooning drawing, I want to point to one thing. These works show how the modernist notion of a medium can be used to bring about a literalist revealing of the support. In Erase the Kooning drawing, Greenbergian teleology capsizes into entropy. In his landmark essay, Art and Objecthood, Greenberg's follower, Michael Free, declared in 1967 that literalist art, quote, draws something like a false inference from the fact that the increasingly explicit acknowledgement of the literal character of the support has been central to the development of modernist painting. I argued that the literalness of the support is a value only within modernist painting, end quote. In Rauschenberg's early works, however, the former support is set free from the modernist concept of the artistic medium. This results in a new situation. There is a chiasmus of medium and support involved, each functioning in terms of the other. A support that doesn't support anything doesn't fulfill the function of a support anymore. It is not subservient to a medium. Presented as an artwork, it becomes the medium. Specific procedures that are related to the notion of a medium, however, are applied in order to bring this shift about. In the white paintings, the canvas is painted, and erasing is a drawing procedure. Thus, the modernist notion of a medium cannot help but to support this shift. In regard of Erase the Kooning drawing, one should know one thing. Rauschenberg admired de Kooning. He was a friend of Jack Tworkov, who sublet studio space from de Kooning. When visiting Tworkov and de Kooning was away, Rauschenberg could attend de Kooning's studio. On one occasion, he photographed the studio and he took a drawing that de Kooning had thrown away out of the waste paper basket. These are photographs of Rauschenberg. And here we can see the drawing on the left side. This is a de Kooning drawing that he took out of the waste paper basket. He put this drawing in a frame on his own studio wall next to works of other artists he admired. Rauschenberg also took a coaster on which de Kooning had drawn a doodle in a restaurant. quote, "It was just total idolizing," he later declared. De Kooning had been working intensely since 1950 on a series of paintings that presumed that accepting artistic failure was a real achievement. Rauschenberg had been able to follow the process of making these pictures during his secret visits to de Kooning's studio. Prior to that time, de Kooning had appeared before the public almost exclusively as an abstract painter. He knew that this was expected for him. For the Venice Biennale in 1950, where he was represented alongside Jackson Pollock, he painted a work, Excavation, that took its lead from Pollock's All Over rhythm and thus conformed to ideas people had about new American painting. Right after completing this painting, he began a series of seemingly chaotic figures of women, of which he stated, quote, "The women became compulsive in the sense of not being able to get hold of it," end quote. Although de Kooning had already painted women in the 1940s, those were influenced by Picasso and Arshal Gorky and also accompanied by a pictorial production that tried to veil the theme of women in abstract configurations. The new series, by contrast, was supposed to lead beyond not just these models, but also the increasingly solidifying doctrine of pure abstraction. The theme of women was presented aggressively and at the same time legitimized by references to art history. Quote, "The women had to do with the female painted through all the ages," de Kooning explained, "all those idols. And maybe I was stuck to a certain extent. I couldn't go on. It did one thing for me. It eliminated composition, arrangement, relationships, light, all this silly talk about line, color, and form, because that was the thing I wanted to get hold of," end quote. What Rauschenberg had proposed to de Kooning when visiting him, though, was precisely this: eliminating composition, arrangement, relationships, line, color, and form, in the literal sense, by erasing them. In his lecture, "What Abstract Art Means to Me," de Kooning had explained in 1951 that abstraction had always existed in painting, only in a form that could not be opposed to representational depiction. Quote, "For the painter to come to the abstract or the nothing, he needed many things. Those things were always things in life: a horse, a flower, a milkmaid in the light, the light in a room through a window made of diamond shapes, maybe tables, chairs, and so forth," end quote. In this context, he spoke of a nothing part in painting and defined it as, quote, "the part that was not painted, but that was there because of the things in the picture that were painted," end quote. That de Kooning spoke of a nothing part in painting was his answer to John Cage's lecture on nothing. Replacing the ordinary concept of abstraction by the concept of nothing points to the experience of something representational that the artist could not possibly get hold of. For de Kooning, this meant his women, which did not make his painting representational, but were, for him, the thing he needed in order to come to the abstract or the nothing. De Kooning's working method related to that, because it was a method of endless overpainting, smudging, smearing, and erasing. But the thing that Rauschenberg needed to come to the abstract or the nothing was not, as it was for de Kooning, a thing to be depicted, but rather a de Kooning drawing. His concept was taking the concept of abstraction literally, yet the nothing was to appear very much in de Kooning's spirit, to be a positive quality based on what was already there or had been there. The fact that the traditional and conventional concept of abstraction no longer did justice to the concerns of most artists was something Harold Rosenberg had remarked early on in 1952. In his article, "The American Action Painters," he attempted a new definition. Quote, "At a certain moment, the canvas began to appear to one American painter after another as an arena in which to act, rather than as a space in which to reproduce, redesign, analyze, or express an object, actual or imagined. What was to go on the canvas was not a picture, but an event," end quote. But de Kooning's women paintings which had not yet been presented to the public at the time, would have unintentionally reduced Rosenberg's distinction to the absurd, since they belong to both categories of paintings he described. They treated a specific object and at the same time defined themselves as action painting in the sense Rosenberg declared. When they were first exhibited in March 53, they provoked pure horror. To most viewers, it seemed obvious that a misogynist and matricide was at work, since Rosenberg's distinction apparently only admitted the conclusion that the action of the action painter was directed against women themselves. Rauschenberg could ultimately risk looking like a patricide with his Erase de Kooning drawing because his father was de Kooning, who had been denounced as a matricide. De Kooning had made it clear to him that the public reaction need not to be a hindrance to an artist. The act of erasing, which seemed to be aimed directly at de Kooning, could indeed serve, as Rauschenberg claimed, to celebrate de Kooning. Rosenberg had spoken of an encounter of the artist, specifically the action painter, with a blank canvas. Both for de Kooning and for Rauschenberg, this term took on another meaning. De Kooning was not interested in an encounter with a blank canvas. Rather, he spoke of an encounter with his idols, the women, and Rauschenberg was able to radicalize this definition of encounter by seeking out de Kooning himself. The piece began when I knocked on his door, he explained. Rauschenberg's arena was no blank canvas, but rather de Kooning's studio. One may think that the story around the creation of Erase de Kooning drawing is one thing, and the result of the erasing another. But I don't think that Rauschenberg thought that way. When Rauschenberg visited de Kooning in his studio, he was confronting him, yes, but also utmost cautious and gentle at the very time. And de Kooning was resistant and supportive at the same time. This, however, is also true in material terms during the process of erasing a drawing. Erasing a drawing, especially one with mixed media, Rauschenberg had to be confronting and utmost cautious and gentle or subtle at the same time. And the drawing would behave then in material terms, resistant and supportive at the same time, since there is a danger that the paper will be ripped during the procedure of erasing the drawing, but the paper, by its very stiffness and consistency, gives support to this procedure. Erase de Kooning drawing is an image of the encounter between Rauschenberg and de Kooning. On the aesthetic and the aesthetic legitimacy of the work can be seen in the congruence of psychological and material terms, each elucidating the other within the medium of drawing. De Kooning declared in an interview, "That's what fascinates me, to make something I can never be sure of, and no one else can either. I will never know, and no one else will ever know. That's the way art is." Erase de Kooning drawing testified to that notion of art. In the late 1960s, the work was understood as the beginning of conceptual art in America, and in the late 70s or early 1980s, the work was seen as the beginning of postmodernism in American art. It was defined as postmodernist appropriation and as an allegorical structure. One text is doubled by another text. But as we have seen, it also can be understood as a literalist work. And amazingly, perhaps, it also can be seen as modernist if we take into account Greenberg's explanation, quote, "The essence of modernism lies in the use of characteristic methods of a discipline to criticize the discipline itself, not in order to subvert it, but in order to entrench it more firmly in its area of competence," end quote. Erasing is a drawing method that is applied to a drawing. This confirms Greenberg's definition. All the entrenched positions, modernism, literalism, postmodernism, are collapsed in this work. Art history writing should be able to cope with such a situation. And I think this is only possible if we take the circumstances and conditions of its production into account. Around 1939, de Kooning made a drawing titled Self-Portrait with Imaginary Brother. When Rauschenberg visited him, and put his request, this might have been a kind of déjà vu for de Kooning, since what Rauschenberg proposed was in fact a self-portrait with imaginary brother, but in the physical, material sense. What once was a depicted scene became transposed to the existence of his drawing itself. I also want to mention briefly that Rauschenberg did a lot of experiments with double exposure in photography. There is a sense of doubling involved in de Kooning's approach to drawing. When he exhibited his women paintings in March 53, he not only exhibited the five paintings, but also 16 of his countless two women drawings. Regarding these drawings, one gets the impression that there are not two women, but one. The one woman, however, as existing double in space and time. There is an idea of vivisection involved, of the same woman existing in two moments in time, but one pictorial space, a split existence. In fact, the women paintings began as two women drawing, as a stage photography of the production process indicates. In the paintings, there is a sense of doubling involved as well, since we get the impression of a real presence of a woman and at the same time the idea of a painted surface, and of course two breeze, arms, eyes, and so on, involve a sense of doubling too. This tension is never completely resolved. Before de Kooning started with his two women drawings, he had painted and drawn primarily men, and especially the theme of two men. Given the fact that Rauschenberg was homosexual and that he was attracted to de Kooning physically as well as emotionally and artistically, we get an idea that he was looking for a kind of response from de Kooning. De Kooning was highly ambivalent about his own sexuality, since he publicly declared that his women paintings might suggest that he is, at least latently, homosexual because the women look ugly. But at the same time, he declared that he had just painted the woman in himself. The theme of ambiguous gender is running through his work. By these remarks, I just want to indicate that things might be highly overdetermined and more complex than first anticipated. Rubbing, of course, is a process that has sexual connotations. Instead of making things too explicit, however, Rauschenberg made use of an aesthetic of silence. This might be due to a homophobic climate of the homophobic climate of the McCarthy era, wherein more homosexuals lost their jobs than communists. During the Cold War, homosexuality was regarded as a danger to American strength and masculinity. By making a work that evokes the idea of a symbolic patricide, Rauschenberg was ironically suggesting an Oedipal ritual that fit into the socio-political provoked heterosexual norm. But what looks like negation might as well be regarded as a goodbye to negation. Rauschenberg later declared about his early works, including Erase de Kooning drawing, quote, "I was trying both at the same time, to purge myself of my teaching and at the same time to exercise the possibilities, so I was doing monochrome no image," end quote. That is to say that we cannot suppose an antithetical opposition, a negation versus a position, but have to take into account a sense of doubling or overdetermination. Negation equals affirmation. Affirmation is conceived as purging. Purging is not destined to be a critique of somebody else, but as self-criticism. It is not meant to be destructive. In his interview with André Parineau in 1961, Rauschenberg explained, "What interests me is to make contacts, not to express a message," end quote. What was important to him is a personal contact with de Kooning and the physical contact between one of de Kooning's drawings and one of his own drawings. Thank you.